The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's January 23rd, 2023, to be rebroadcast on January 25th, 2023, at irregular times on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who's coming soon. She's out in the other room. If you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment. I may be able to respond, or maybe Fran will be able to respond. So just right down there in the box below the video, if you wish. If you have a comment, you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you comment right below here. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, the bicycle business, upcoming news in cycling, and the bicycle calendar. So I'm recording my shows on Monday now using Facebook Live and then playing them at our normal times on Wednesday at 11 a.m. at WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. That's it. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast outlet. Ron's Rant of the Week. This is a good one. Speed cameras. You know what speed cameras are? I just happened to be reminded of it the other day because I was sitting at a red light and I happened to note that there was a camera on top of the red light. There are lots of red light cameras out there right now, but speed cameras are a different animal. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that because I think speed cameras, well, here it is. If we can't slow them down in the normal fashion, maybe it's time for cameras. Helpful or harmful? More in the show. Yeah, this could be very controversial. But anyway, it's what it is. Also, riding on the not-so-frozen trails this time of year. Excuse me. I got something caught in my throat. Talk about the weather, etc. Ruts and rants, we're going to call that one. You know, the trails are just not really very firm right now because we have, we don't have any frost in the ground here. It's the most unusual winter I've seen in a long time. It's very warm here. The west is getting all the snow. The northeast is getting all the rain. So our weather resembles more like Portland, Oregon than it does, you know, northeastern Connecticut. We usually get a pretty good freeze by now, which we did have, but then we got a pretty good thaw afterwards. So we don't have that deep set frost in the ground that we usually have this time of year, which is a problem for the trails because the trails are very soft and they're kind of wet because we're getting what Portland, Oregon always gets, the daily rainstorm. We seem to be getting rain all the time. I knew that we were going to get a lot of moisture this winter because we had a very, very dry summer. Great summer for cycling, great summer for being outside, but not so good as far as our reservoirs went. So Mother Nature seems to have a great way of evening out the way things are. Look at poor California right now. They're really suffering with the evening out of Mother Nature. Unfortunately, they have no way of absorbing all that moisture, so they've got a problem. We absorb the moisture. We've got different types of soils here. We've got different terrains here, so it makes it a lot easier for us. But the trails are wet. They are very, very wet. So I'm just shouting out here on my rant on this because if you can stay off the trails, stay off the trails. You know, if you must go there, then you must go there. But if you can stay off the trails, they would stay in much better repair if you could do that. On a positive side, shout out to Billy and Laura. Rehab baby, stick to it. Guys are getting close. Billy's already there. He's as rehabbed as you're going to get. Laura, on the other hand, she's got some work ahead of her. But that's all right. We know she's going to do it. She's tough. She can handle it. Let's see. Indoor cycling has begun again. I mentioned this last week too. It seems like we spend a lot of time this time of year indoors on bicycles. Not my favorite place to ride my bike. I'd much rather be going somewhere, seeing something and all. But if I can be indoors riding my bike and around people that like to ride bikes, so that kind of helps. And it also helps my fitness too. So that's always a good thing. I'm teaching 7 classes a week right now, so I'm in the gym a lot. Well, anyway, that's what it is. And Fran, of course, is just Zwifting away.
Yeah.
Zwifting away. That's
I
you.
Rode my 250 miles for
season. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so Franny had this challenge, and her challenge was to ride her bike 250 miles for the month of January,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And you raised money for St. Jude's,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a, what was it, like a $250 challenge or something
yeah.
like that. And you raised how much?
$521.
Wow. So thank you to all that supported Fran in
yeah.
her endeavor to raise money for St. Jude's. That was really cool.
Yeah. And
totally
I already
cool.
rode the 250 miles and I have... how many more days? Today's the 23rd, so what, 9 days?
Yep.
So I'll ride a bunch more miles.
Yeah, that's really good. I think a shout-out goes to Scott Livingston also, who is doing the same thing. I believe he's on that list
wow.
of people that are doing
right.
that, too.
That's
I saw
nice.
A few people that were on that list. So kind of a cool way to keep you motivated in the wintertime, you know, raise money for a great charity. By announcing it somehow and being able to post it out. It's really kind of a cool thing. So that's really cool. And let's see. I got a great story for you. When's a cop when you need him? Or police officer. We'll be nice. We don't have to call him a cop. We can call him a police officer. So I am leaving the... And this is one of those things where, you know... We see so many people doing bad things on the road when they're driving around in their motorized vehicles, and we see people on bicycles doing the same thing. So it could go either way. I understand that. But this one in particular amused me because it's, well, listen and hear. Okay, so I am leaving the community center a couple of days back, last week, middle of the week, and I... came to a red light and I was turning right onto a from one state highway onto another state highway so I could get home. And of course the light was red in my direction, but the light was still red in the other direction because it's complicated. But anyway, they still had a delay to go. So I stopped, I took a look, no one was moving forward. I turned right on red and I drove my car down the road. I get, I don't know, maybe 30 seconds down the road and this high-powered, very expensive motorized vehicle goes flying by me, a sedan goes flying by me, and obviously was upset that I might be in their way going down the road later on. So they just went blasting by. And I mean, they were going so fast, I could hear the engine roaring when it went by. And then right behind it, there's another one. And it's this big SUV, and it is also doing the same thing. Well, here's the best part of the story. The SUV was an unmarked state police vehicle. And yeah, you got it. The person who was roaring his way down the road was instantly pulled over and I'm sure got a nice little ticket because the speed limit there is only 30 miles an hour and they had to have been passing me at 60. So anyway... And justice for all. So that's my where's the cop when you need him story. It's not often that you get to see that. But I did get a little chuckle when I went by because this person was obviously far too impatient and driving, you know, a motorized vehicle. So anyway, if it only could happen sometime when I'm out on my bike, that would be really cool too. But, you know, it is what it is. So. More in the show. Let's see. What have I got here? Okay. So moving down, Mechanical Minute Cycling Tips. This is a reach out from a listener. Shout out to Chris Kearns. Hey, Chris, I know you're listening. So this is a shout out to Chris Kearns, who is still working in a bicycle shop. And he is a mechanic there. And he says that the shop he works at is now pushing for winter service promotions. A lot of bike shops are pushing winter service promotions right now. So this is the time to check in with your local bike shop and see what they're offering for you. So often shops will discount service on a bike in exchange for you bringing it to them when not so busy. Remember, when they're busy is when you want to ride your bike, okay? If you're not riding your bike right now, or you've got your second bike or whatever it is, your trainer bike or whatever rigged up inside the house, but you've got that nice bike that you like to take out on the roads or even off-road, your mountain bike, whatever it is, and maybe you're staying off the trails because you're being responsible and you're not digging the trails up. Little shout out there. This is the time to go see your local bike shop, please, because they're not busy right now. They may be busy in other ways, but they could really use the business and you could really use the service. So there it is.
And something to do and someone to say hello to.
And also very much so, something to do and someone to say hello to. And if there is a favorite beverage, whether it be caffeinated or alcoholic, you can always bring a little gift along too. I don't encourage the use of the pushing and use of alcohol, but coffee always goes over well in a bike shop. Anyway, so it helps to bring something nice and friendly along with you too to help out your local bike shop. These folks work really, really hard. They have a time of year that they work exceptionally hard, and that window of time is very, very short up here in the Northeast. So I would say that that window of opportunity I saw when I owned my bicycle shop was about 4 to 6 months. And then it was over and things really calmed down. Boy, if you could just encourage people to bring, if I could just encourage people to bring your bikes in to see your local bike shop now, that's a great idea. It just really, really helps everyone. And, you may get a reward of a discount for doing so. I'm not going to tell you who's doing what, because that's your responsibility to figure that out. And it's not my responsibility to advertise that. But have a conversation with your local bike shop. This also will set the stage for you in the summertime when you are at that point where you go, oh dear, I really need a bike shop right now because something has happened that I can't repair on my bike. And they'll remember you if you brought your bike in the wintertime far better than they will remember you if you're highly demanding during a time of the year that they're too busy to work on your bike or pay attention to you. So just to let you know, this is the way it works. Local bike shop support is huge. Don't ever forget about your local bike shop or your local bike shop mechanic. Okay, what else do I have here? Sweet spot training, the most bang for your training buck. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the show too. We'll get into that. So we're going to move on into the content of the show. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, obviously, which I started out with, is cameras. Cameras at intersections, cameras that are speed cameras. Cameras work because if one of the radar detection devices measures a vehicle's speed above the legal limit, a photograph of a car is taken. That photo is then mailed to the registered owner of the car along with the speeding ticket. Harmful or helpful? You be the judge. Well, you won't be the judge. The judge will be the judge, unfortunately, on this. But, if people won't respect the speed limits that are set up, especially in urban areas where, you've got lots of pedestrian and cycling activity and you really, really shouldn't be going faster than 20 or 25 miles per hour. That's my opinion, obviously, very strong, but I also know what the limitations are when you're struck by a vehicle at certain speeds versus other speeds. And if you're in an area that has crosswalks, the speed limit, in my opinion, should drop down to no more than 25 miles an hour, no less than 15 miles per hour. Everyone would be a lot safer because of it. But it doesn't always work that way. No, human nature, you get behind the wheel of a powerful vehicle, and the first thing you do is you push it as hard as you can whenever you can. Maybe you're late for work. Maybe you're just impatient. Maybe you're on some sort of a schedule that you have to, that you feel like you're behind now. That's not the fault of the other people that are using the road. It is the fault of the driver of the motorized vehicle. So plan your time accordingly. Make a phone call and say, hey, I'm going to be late, whatever it is. But please don't take the lives of pedestrians and cyclists into your hands, because your vehicle is a weapon and it is really deadly. And we don't like that a whole lot. So we're going to go on to explore this a little bit. And let's see if I can find... okay, so this piece of information came from a law office. And it's in California. And so there's a big debate going on in California right now because speed cameras are not legal in California right now. Certain types of speed cameras aren't. So this comes from the city of Sacramento, California, and it has a... That's the capital of California, right?
Yes.
Sacramento? Right.
Yes.
It has a fair share of red light cameras. California currently does not use speed cameras, which employ radar to measure vehicle speed. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, they have been used at various times and locations in 12 other states. California does not have laws prohibiting the use of such cameras. Despite their unpopularity with the public, we could see them used shortly as the state attempts to reduce its traffic accident and casualty statistics, especially in its larger cities. So how do the cameras work? The cameras work because if one of the radar detection devices measures a vehicle's speed above the legal limit, a photograph of the car is taken, and then a photo is mailed to the registered owner of the car along with the speeding ticket. I don't know what the legality of this is or the prosecution rate is on a situation like this. I don't know if this can be fought in court or not, but I know that there are a lot of arguments involved with this, and there are pros and cons either way. The pros are, you know, there you are, you're on your bicycle and you're riding down the road. Maybe you're in the designated bike lane, which is not a protected lane, and a car goes speeding past you, and even to the point where they go screaming through a red light because they're very impatient because they've been sitting behind you for 10 or 15 seconds and you have just ruined their day. So they nail it and they go flying down the road to get around you. And then the next thing you know, they've got hey, you're on candid camera, and they get a picture taken. So the arguments in favor are simple. They result in fewer speed related incidents and fewer, basically, they break down fatalities. There's all sorts of good reasons why they should be there. I'm not a huge fan of knowing that Big Brother is watching me all the time when I'm out there. But as I have matured and as I have spent more and more miles on the road and been out in traffic, I'm starting to feel that this may be the only way to really control the situation that is out of control right now. We're record breaking every year as far as fatalities with pedestrians and cyclists. So why is this happening? What vehicles are doing? I can tell you what vehicles are doing it. Since the vehicles got larger, the fatalities have gone up. That's all there is to it. If you do an internet search on this, that's everybody says the same thing. It's all about the size of the vehicle. The vehicles got too big, and because the vehicles got too big, the visibility decreased, and now the vulnerable users, cyclists, pedestrians, runners, they're now at risk when they're out there. And they shouldn't be, because environmentally, they're the right idea. And, not that we want to be judgmental at all, but cars are not environmentally friendly. They cause a lot of problems, and even though they're getting better and better and better, they're going to continue to cause a lot of problems, including when they become more of an electric style of vehicle. They're also going to be a nightmare because they're too big. They're just too big. And that's really where the problem is here, is the size of the vehicle. So the arguments for it are obvious to me. It's, you know, they're going to slow people down. They're going to bring people back down to the speed limit, which is presented in front of them. If you drive through the University of Connecticut campus, where we broadcast from, if you drive through that campus, you will see that the speed limit immediately drops down to 25 miles per hour on the state highway when you're going through campus. There's a really, really good reason for that. There are numerous crosswalks. I know of one particular crosswalk and traffic light that was put up many, many, many years ago, long before any of this really became an issue, because of a lawsuit with parents of a student that was hit and killed in front of a dorm that was across the street from the main campus. And now there is a traffic light there and there is a crosswalk there. So, you know, this is, I mean, why should someone have to die in order to implement something like this? It's not right. It's just not right at all. So anyway, here comes the arguments against speed cameras. Here we go. Hang on to your amendments and your rights. Here we go. Number one, they are unconstitutional. The Constitution asserts the right of an accused party to be able to confront the accuser. In the speed camera scenario, an accuser is an inanimate object.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good argument. It is a good argument. There's number two. There's not significant evidence that cameras increase safety. There is a bias from vendors that sell equipment to implement speed cameras without sufficient research to conclude that the systems improve safety. Number three, slow and erratic speeds are hazardous. This is my favorite one. Yeah, it's true. Going 35 miles an hour on a 65 mile an hour highway is hazardous. I will agree to that. I will totally agree to that. Going 25 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone instead of 70, it's not hazardous. It's smart. It's the right thing to do. Anyway, moving on. Let me explain the argument. The argument says the safety risk is involving in driving slower than optimal speed for conditions, which an awareness of a speed camera could create. Additionally, the sudden realization of such camera can cause an abrupt speed change by drivers, increasing the risk of rear-end accidents. Boy, that's the biggest pile of... Anyway, we're going to move forward. Incorrect readings. Well, this one's got some substance to it. Using these systems will result in incorrect speed measurements and will require innocent drivers to prepare their case to defend themselves against the citation and fine, adding to the difficulty of defending oneself against a photograph because the tickets are received in mail weeks after the alleged infraction. It puts the accused at a disadvantage regarding evidence collection necessary to combat the ticket. The accused may not even remember the circumstances of what they thought was a routine drive that took place weeks earlier. That's fair. That's a fair argument. But you know what? You were speeding. And you know what? If you're using, I'm going to add to this because I can. If you're using a GPS device in your car, many of the GPS devices, not all of them do this, but many of them actually have on the screen for the GPS the actual speed limit that you are driving through. And they're pretty accurate. I'm really surprised how, you know, when it goes from 30 miles an hour up to 45 miles an hour because you've driven out of a zone, the second that I see that sign that has the miles per hour change, my miles per hour change on my GPS unit too. So they're pretty darn accurate, I have to say. But anyway, you know, if you didn't know you were going 60 miles an hour in a 30 mile an hour zone, you should pay more attention to your driving. That's my feeling. Okay, mass surveillance without a warrant. Here we go. The target population of these cameras is simple. Anyone who drives a car, regardless of their driving record. The surveillance is completed without a warrant, and worries exist about the compilation and storage of the information and how that information could affect the accuser's insurance rates, for example. Look, if you speed in your car and you get caught speeding, and you get caught speeding two or three times, your insurance rate should go up. Your risk. Stop right there. Citation is issued to the registered owner, who is often not the driver. Well, that's a possibility. But who are you lending your car out to, or who is responsible for that? And that's something that you're just going to have to work out between the two of you. But yeah, there you go. So that is a problem, I suppose. It could be a problem. Anyway, there are better ways to decrease traffic, to increase driver safety. Better ways to increase driver safety. I can't wait to read this one. Research has shown that the effective speed control devices include signs indicating that the area is controlled by radar and physical obstacles such as speed bumps and roundabouts. Furthermore, the cameras are not effective in detecting erratic driving that could indicate an impaired driver. The human element of an officer or citizen observation is more effective in that regard. True. But, you know, what about my little incident the other day? I had an officer there, and it worked. It worked. But anyway, primary motivation is the profit motive. Oh, boy. Speed cameras will result in a much higher number of citations being issued. As discussed above, some people who receive a citation may not even remember the incident. Others may not have been the driver at the time the citation was issued. A fair number of erroneous citations will be paid by the registered owner, regardless, in the interest of saving time or out of fear of racking up late fees, not to mention the number of actual speeders being cited, and therefore paying the citation will increase. Thereafter paying the citation increase. The cities that have been using speed cameras have significantly experienced increased revenue. This is an incentive that California city government officials may soon be unable to resist. So, is this a money issue or is this a safety issue? You tell me. I don't think this is, there are times when you're out and you see what we would call speed traps, where you'll have a couple of officers out on the road and they've got a radar gun out. And you take a look at the time of the month, and it tends to be towards the end of the month, and you kind of start to wonder whether or not there is some motivation there to collect some revenue because, you know, the month is closing out. Sorry, I spent my entire life in sales, and I know all about the end of the month. So so for now, California is free of speed cameras, but the debate is going to continue because, you know, they will slow you down. So there's a funny little town in New Hampshire called Jaffrey, New Hampshire. I don't know if anybody knows about this, but they are very, very close to actually a very popular hiking place called Mount Monadnock. And it is it's popular because you get to the top of Mount Monadnock, you can see all of the New England states from the top. You can see Boston on a clear day. It's pretty cool. And it has an easy way up and a hard way up. So either way, it just draws a lot of people. So it is one of the most popular hiking mountains in the United States because of that. Possibly the world, someone once told me, but I don't have the facts on that. But anyway, you have to drive through this town called Jaffrey, and it's what you would expect. It's a really, really tiny town in the middle of nowhere. I've been pulled over there. I got pulled over there, and they let me go. They were nice enough to let me go, so it wasn't too bad. But they have a record of law-abiding drivers going through that town that is next to none out there in comparison to other towns. Why? Because they enforce it. They're out there. They're doing their law enforcement. They're slowing people down. I know now if I go to Chaffrey, New Hampshire, if I'm going to go up to Mount Monadnock and go hike to the top of the mountain, I'm going to be super careful driving through because it gets in your brain. And that's the whole point. And that's what the cameras will do too. Yeah, it's technology. It's a problem. You know, if you're a Waze driver or even I think a Google driver now when you're using Google Maps, I know Apple Maps alerts you as to where the radars are when you're going down the road. Or if there is a if there's a red light camera, they're getting reported and now the information is there. What does that do? It causes people to slow down at certain spots and then speed back up and slow down and speed up. That's not so great. But at least they slow down when they get near an intersection. That's not such a terrible thing because that's where most of the accidents happen. And as far as fatal accidents go, even car-on-car accidents go, it's often at an intersection with a regulated red light. And that red light, all it takes is someone to run it. And someone else is in peril because of it. So that's another reason why Pedal and Ron here loves traffic circles. We love roundabouts here because roundabouts, there's no way around them. You've got to slow down and you got to pay attention when you go through a roundabout. Your cruise control won't bring you through a roundabout. It's just not going to happen. And your car has to slow down in order to navigate them. Anyway, cameras. So my shout out to everyone who is listening right now, and you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can make a comment right here on my Facebook page. How do you feel about this? Is this an infringement of your rights? Is this a violation of some sort of your rights? What's your feeling about this? Are you willing to personally slow down when you're driving your car, or do you need a little help reminding you to slow down when you're driving your car? I think it's the latter of the two. I think that from what I've seen over the years, I think human nature is faster, more powerful car creates faster, more powerful driver. And I'm saying powerful only because the person sitting behind the wheel of the car somehow feels that they're more powerful because they're behind the behemoth with the monster engine in it. So, you know, it's like, slow down, America. Please, please slow down. Please, please, please. We just want to ride our bikes safely on your roads, on our roads. That's all of us, by the way. We're all taxpayers. We all pay for the roads, and we would all like to share them alike, so and safely. So anyway, that extends a very good rant from the very beginning here, and I'll go back to what else I have here on my show. It seems like I had another little piece here about this. There's probably a lot more I can get involved with from the National Council on Safety and all that. There's just so many different things about red light cameras and programs that are out there. I think we're gonna probably, let's see here, where is it? Yeah, that's the report right there. So there's just so many avenues here you can go with this, and there's different studies that have been made out there. And this one's kind of interesting. Work zone cameras. There's been a lot of talk about work zones and work zone fatalities because of workers being out on the highways and traffic just not slowing down when there's, you know, obviously flashing lights and there's, you know, cones and barriers and all this to protect the workers, the poor people that are out there actually doing the work to keep the highways nice for you. And so it's becoming a bit of a problem. So according to, this goes back to 2020, but according to the National Work Zone Safety Information Clearinghouse, over 100,000 crashes occurred in work zones in 2020. Over 100,000. People, pay attention. Resulting in an estimated 44,000 work zone injury crashes and 857 work zone crash deaths. State legislatures have responded by passing several laws in recent years, either studying the potential use of work zone speed cameras or of authorizing their use to ticket violators. When it says slow down, slow down. You know, there's a reason that sign is up there. You know, these are people that have lives. They have families. They have friends. They have a lot of things going on, and all they're trying to do is earn a living working. And because you're not paying attention when you're driving your monster vehicle, they get hurt, or worse yet, they may die. So, you know, you really got to pay attention to this, because there's a lot of this that also happens around school zones. I mean, why would you go screaming through a school zone in a high-powered vehicle? Why? What's the point? Were you never a kid? Do you have kids? Do you have grandkids? Whatever it is. I mean, come on. This just makes sense. And the more and more people and towns that are starting to pay attention to the alternative transportation issue here, i.e. putting kids on bikes and having them ride to school like they used to, or walking even, you know. I mean, parents are afraid to let their kids out the door these days because of the way that they behave when they're behind a motorized vehicle. Yeah, I'm going to point that out too. That's another issue there. The parents that seem most concerned about the safety of their child when their child is transporting themselves in some way are the first ones to put them in their vehicle and drive them to school. All right. Backwards thinking here, folks. The more people that drive to school, the higher the incident is of someone getting hit because of a driver not paying attention. Buses were made for a specific reason. They're safer. They're a lot safer. They're a much better way to carry lots of passengers and get them safely to where they belong. Putting, 50 households of kids into SUVs to bring them to school is not the safer option. It just doesn't work. Putting 50 kids on a bus is a way safer option. So anyway, we'll explore this a little bit more because I've been watching these really cool videos recently about, what do they call it? They call it the bicycle bus. And what they do is people basically get all the kids together to ride to school together like a big bus, like they're on a bus, but they're on their bicycles. It's so cool. They're doing this in Portland, Oregon. They're doing it all around the country. They're doing it in other countries. And it's just because they are supervised by, you know, the teachers who have to get to school too, and they're able to keep them contained, they actually have a very safe environment to learn how to use their bicycle for transportation. It's very cool. Totally, totally cool. So let's go back here to red light cameras. Red light running crashes led to around 116,000 deaths and injuries. 116,000 injuries and 928 fatalities in 2020. To combat this dangerous traffic violation made by drivers, some states and local governments have adopted the use of red light cameras. Red light cameras link to traffic signals and monitor the green, yellow, and red phases of traffic lights. After the light turns red, the camera takes a picture or video of the moving vehicle before the vehicle enters the intersection, and again when the vehicle is in the intersection. Both photos must show the signal is red in the red phase before issuing a citation. The time, date, and location of the violation is also documented. So there's another way that this is done. Fran and I sat at the end of our road because we were on, I think it was Christmas Eve, and we were heading out to my sister's for Christmas Eve. And I stopped, and there was an ability to make a right-hand turn on red there. But I just got a funny feeling, and, you know, it was Christmas Eve, got a little cautious, and I waited for the light to turn before I made the turn. And sure enough, this car drove right through it, not even tapping the brakes as they drove straight through the red light. If I had pulled out when the light turned green, we would have been hit. and Merry Christmas. That wouldn't have been so good. So anyway, you know, the traffic signals are the worst places of all. Two places that I get real, real nervous when I'm in my motorized vehicle: traffic lights and parking lots, because inevitably someone's going to hit you. It just, it happens. So you got to be super, super cautious and careful. So anyway, this is something that is happening, is that, you know, municipalities are starting to take a look at this a little bit more. That's why we're seeing the ongoing increase of roundabouts, traffic circles, because the traffic circles make a difference. There is also, this is a quick shout out to the city of Hartford and Asylum Street. There's an Asylum Street project right now. If you live in Hartford or you're from around that area, you might want to pay attention and attend the meetings that are happening. You can look on Facebook on Transport Hartford and you'll see information about meetings and such. But Asylum Street is about to get a major makeover, as long as the funding goes through and everything is approved correctly. And it's going to really change the level of security when you're a pedestrian or cyclist, and even a motorized vehicle when you're on Asylum Street in Hartford. Great move. Really, really good idea. That is just a mess getting through there. If you've ever hopped off the highway to take Asylum Street to West Hartford, which is right where my sister lives. She lives very, very right, one block off of Asylum Street. It's just a nightmare. It's traffic lights everywhere. There's lots of pedestrian crossings there. And it's at certain times of the day, it's worse than ever, because Asylum Street and Farmington Avenue are the exit ramps to Western Connecticut when people are getting out of work in Hartford and moving back out to the suburbs where they live. So it's a big project. It's coming up soon. I'll try to keep my research open on that and keep people involved in knowing what's going on. But yeah, it's a good thing. It's totally a good thing. So let's see, what else have we got here today for us to look at here? We did this, we did this. And we're going to go to sweet spot training. I talked about this earlier in the intro to the show, and what it's all about. If you're embarking on a training plan, chances are you'll have come across sweet spot workouts. Before you get too excited, it doesn't mean a club run with multiple cafe stops. It refers to the intensity of that particular training session. So, How does sweet spot training differ from, say, base training or high intensity training, otherwise known as interval training, which is talked about quite a bit, or HIIT training? And why should you consider including sweet spot sessions into part of your training? And this comes from, where's my bike radar here? It's right here. No, that is not it. Hang on here. This comes from, and here we go. So anyway, it came from Bike Radar, which is now failing to find the server. Very nice. That's always fun when we have something like this happen. Okay, here it is. Sorry about that. So sweet spot refers to the intensity of a workout, and typically refers to intensity between the upper end zone of 3 and the lower end zone of zone 4. Zone 3 being just below 80% of your max, and zone 4 being above 80% of your max. So if you're training with a power meter, that really works well. If you're training with a heart rate meter, that also works well. But anyway, when you're training at sweet spot intensity, or what I like to call, when I'm running my indoor classes, comfortably hard, which is right on that edge, right on that edge, not quite into the 80%, but, you know, just below it. So you're looking at, if you're using it with a heart rate monitor, you're at about 75 to 78% of your maximum heart rate. If you know that, that's helpful. Or you might be at a particular wattage, or you're basically, what's it say here? 88 to 93% of your functional threshold power, or around 75 to 85% of your maximum heart rate. So you're right on that edge. You're just kind of bouncing on that edge is where you're at. When you're training at sweet spot intensity, you're placing your body under sustained stress, but not so much that you can't hold the efforts for a long duration. I often use this level when I'm teaching a class, but I can't keep the class there for the whole class. I mean, I'd love to run a whole class that where we just sat at the sweet spot. That'd be great, but boring, very, very boring. I think I'd lose people as fast as I gained people on that one. It's just too boring. So I tend to move my workouts around a little bit to help keep people interested in what's going on. And I can keep them pretty close to their sweet spot without them even realizing that they're doing it, by just adding in some high intensity hits during the middle of a sweet spot training. So you can do it. So it does require some concentration to do it, and there is a so the efforts are repeatable without inducing a high level of fatigue. As the name suggests, you're training at a level that hits a sweet spot between intensity and volume. So on a cellular level, training at sweet spot increases your mitochondria density, according to this author. Mitochondria are the small structures found in almost all human cells. Their main job is to perform cellular respiration, including taking in nutrients from the cell, breaking them down, and turning those nutrients into energy. The mitochondria are the powerhouses of cells, and by increasing your mitochondria density, you're making your body able to create energy more easily. Ultimately, though, through doing sweet spot training, you will feel an increased sense of fitness in terms of engine size, threshold, and ability to produce energy. It can help you improve your aerobic fitness. So the benefits are fairly obvious there. And the thing is, you can't do it all the time, but it's quality training and probably the most beneficial way to get fit. Rather than slogging away for hours on base rides as part of your winter training, which some of us do, I definitely run a certain level of that. Sweet spot training produces similar psychological adaptations and training effects for a much shorter session. As a result, you'll still expect to reap the rewards of a Zwift FTP test. When was the last time you did an FTP test, Ryan?
It was before I got sick.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I have to.
So it has been a while. So.
Yeah, it was before I had started having my health issues, and
right.
I tried to do a workout on Zwift, and it has my FTP set at a certain wattage, and I couldn't turn the pedals. So
right.
I have to do another FTP test because
right.
my FTP unfortunately went down.
Yeah, you need to check those every once in a while. On the same discussion, sometimes you need to do your FTP again because it may go up.
Yes.
And so, you know, depending on what your level of fitness is and what you've put into it over the year. Or where you're just at that time of year, your FTP can go back and forth. It can definitely move around. But it is really nice to know what your fitness threshold is. And it because from there, you can actually be very scientific about how you ride your bike and how you train. And then I'm going to also throw out, as people get really obsessive about their training, and I understand, I get it. I've been, I was a competitive cyclist for a really long time, and I totally understand why. But don't forget the power of rest. I say it over and over again. Everything I read, the more I spend time on my bike, the older I get, the rest is just such a key function. It's so, so important. So, for a cyclist who works and doesn't have much time, maybe 4 or 6 hours a week of training time a week, doing a couple of blocks of sweet spot and an hour's ride on a trainer or out of the road or in a Zwift session can give you the psychological benefits of a much longer ride. So it's good to ride that steady pace. Drawbacks, well, there are some. While sweet spot training has a number of benefits, it's important to not become one-dimensional in your training. Otherwise, you risk neglecting other areas of your cycling fitness, such as your VO2 max. You'll reach a ceiling, and once you've built the phase of the sweet spot, you're going to cap it, and then you'll want to progress by doing more high-intensity interval work. Sweet spots training is particularly well suited to a rider's training for endurance events like long time trials, as well as alpine climbs. It doesn't mean it's a catch-all for training for all solution for all cyclists. It's not suited to everyone. A track sprinter, for example, wouldn't do a lot of sweet spot training. They don't need endurance, and all their training is top end in the gym. They'll either be doing their max or going super easy to recover. Sweet spot training builds the aerobic side of things, while track sprinting is an anaerobic sport. So the key is identifying the demands of the event or goal that you're training towards. So if you're looking at going out and doing a long, maybe metric century ride or century ride, and you're trying to increase decrease the time spent doing it, sweet spot training, that's the way to go. Sweet spot's good. If you're going out on the weekly club ride where it's just a bit higher than your ability, you might want to throw in some sweet spot training. See how hard and long you can push your body. But keep it right at that edge. Don't go too high. Don't go too low. You got to really play with that to get it right. So there's great ways of doing it, and Zwift has even sweet spot sessions in its structured workout and training plans. So if you're on Zwift, you can certainly get some benefit from that. Excuse me.
And the nice thing about Zwift is when you do your FTP test, Zwift will reset your FTP so that when you go in to do the workouts, your FTP is set at whatever your last FTP test was.
Right.
So mine is set at much higher than I can handle right now.
Well,
so
you should change that because you're getting yourself in trouble by doing that.
Well, I can't do workouts right now because it thinks my FTP is higher than it is.
So there's other sessions that you'll see out there on Ruvi, Trainer Road, and Wahoo also have ways of gauging your FTP. I looked at mine today on Wahoo and it's way too high, but that's beside the point. I haven't really done it for a while. And again, I'm not in the place I like to be. So, the FTP on Wahoo, it goes by watts. And, if I'm hanging out in an FTP, well, it could be close. 200 watts is what my FTP was listed as. That's pretty high.
Yeah,
that's pretty high. That's higher than I generally like to be, because if I'm at 200 watts all the time, well, I'm gonna play with it. I'll let you know in a week, because I've got a whole bunch of classes in front of me, and I can take one of those days and play around with it just to see where I'm at. But I know today, because I taught an hour and a half class yesterday, which was a pretty intense class. Especially I know that because I certainly felt it, and it was, I needed a good nap later on in the day. But I also had a couple of the people who were in the class yesterday come to my class this morning, and they said that they were just completely wiped out from yesterday's workout. So, you know, you got to be careful about what you do. That's all. And you do have to remember the whole rest thing. The rest thing is just so incredibly important. So that's the sweet spot. Are you riding at your sweet spot? Are you paying any attention at all to that? Do you have a coach? You know, feel free to comment below. I'd love to hear what you have and what you're doing and how it's going to help you. Because, you know, it's a new year. Here we go again. We're resetting. A lot of people make resolutions this time of year. And fitness is always on that list for some reason. Getting in shape, staying in shape, finding a different level of fitness, whatever it is, that they often fall into the resolution basket. So I thought I would talk about that today, and hopefully somebody got some information out of this. Maybe I got my own information out of it by listening to myself talk. I don't know. But anyway, that's the thing about sweet spot. So I am completely running out of time. Unbelievable. So we are definitely running out of time. There are some new things to talk about, and I think I went over this a week ago or so, but I'm just going to read it back one more time because I thought it was remarkable. Trek Bicycles ranks high for trademark oppositions. Without objection, Trek is a lovely word, whether a noun or a verb. Trek, though, is something else entirely. Trek has opposed more than 400 applications for trademarks the company felt came too close to its turf, earning the number 4 spot in the list of prolific opposers, just behind Apple and ahead of brands like Nike and Red Bull. How about that? Yeah. So anyway, if you got a great idea, make sure Trek doesn't have a patent on it, because it appears that they have a very, very busy legal team, which doesn't surprise me because I see the direction that they're going in. So we shall see what happens on that in the future. Additionally, there's some new Lance Armstrong information out there.
He wants to be relevant.
So we're gonna read that. Like, I gotta read that article. It came through in, I think it's Bicycling Magazine. I think it's where that came through. So I have to read that, and I am certain that I will have some comments on that, because, you know, Lance Armstrong is Lance Armstrong. If you get a chance, check out my Facebook page. Check out the finish of the last UCI World Cup cross race between Matthew Vanderpoel and Wout Van Aert. Oh my God. It's there. I gave you the last 7 minutes of the race. You can go and watch that. It's a really, really good time. Those two guys, I mean, they're world-class road cyclists now, and yet they're still like 1 and 2 at cyclocross. They're still like at each other the whole way. It's amazing. So anyway, what do we got here? The schedule's coming up. You know, it's winter withdrawal time. Get on your Zwift and kick some butt, or try out a spin class. Do whatever you have to do there. Don't forget about the bicycle game on 1 Elizabeth Street in Hartford, Connecticut. It's a really cool exhibit and definitely cool to check out. The Saturday, February 4th, Sunday, February 5th is the World Championship Cross Race. Finishing points, continuing shouting out to Too Tall Billy and Laura. Keep up the good work, you guys. Don't forget about the bicycle game in Hartford. So, are you upset with the way that people drive when you're on your bike? How do you feel about speed cameras? Violation of your rights or a good way to save cyclist and pedestrian lives? I'll say it again. It won't be the last time. Get loud. Get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, places to ride safely, and join the revolution of change. Remember, when presenting to your local governments, come with solutions, not complaints or problems. Please support your local bike shop. Respect one another. It's 2023. Initiate. Participate, ride your bike, and tell everyone you know. And finally, take on the Pedal and Run Challenge. If you got a motorized vehicle, park it. Use your bike for just one day. You might surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a contribution to the show, you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. See you next week.